Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, hey, clones, what's going on? Welcome back to the Daily Jungle. Glad you found it. We just wrapped up Tuesday's show, and you are going to enjoy this one. We were all over the Stanley Cup playoffs as the Caps rip Game 3 from Pittsburgh. Sidney Crosby went down on a controversial hit. We had NBC's Eddie Olczyk in. He broke it down, and he's going to take a look ahead to the Kentucky Derby. Plus, USA Today's Sam Amick came in. He talked NBA playoffs, and LA Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn was tremendous right after the Chargers' strong draft. We've got all of that, and most importantly, you clones doing what you do. So, Alvy, you go ahead and do what you do. It's not very often that you see a team go into San Antonio's building and lay a beatdown like that on them. In the words of the late Pat Tillman, that was a nice, swift ass-kicking. The Rockets were actually up 39 at one point. They were up 39 on San Antonio. But that'll happen when you can't make a shot and the other guy can't miss. That'll happen if you're the Spurs and you let the Rockets come in, dictate tempo, impose their will, and get up and down the way they did. Teams that can run can really punish the Spurs, and nobody knows that better than San Antonio head coach Greg Popovich.
Sure, we competed, but I don't think we executed in a very wise manner. So we disobeyed a lot of basic basketball rules that they can take advantage of. If we're going to shoot quickly and shoot poorly, it's going to be a fast break deal all night long. And they're better at that than we are.
That's the last thing they want, is a fast break deal all night long. Because that's exactly what happened last night. Remember, the Spurs handled Memphis because they like to slow it down. They like to grind it out. Houston does just the opposite. And if the Rockets continue to shoot it like that, and the Spurs allow them to get out and run like that, it might in fact be a short series. The Spurs allowed them to get way too comfortable. In fact, I don't ever remember seeing another team as comfortable as Houston was in San Antonio's house. And you know Houston can shoot it and fill it, but you do not expect them to D up the way they did. Nor do you expect their bigs to abuse San Antonio's the way they did. The Rockets completely erased LaMarcus Aldridge as Ryan Anderson and Clint Capella outplayed Aldridge and David Lee. That can't happen. Not if you're San Antonio. That was supposed to be a big edge for the Spurs. And not only did the Rockets lock up LaMarcus Aldridge, but they did a nice job on Kawhi Leonard too. He got 21, but he needed 14 shots to get it. That's Greg Popovich's worst loss in a series opener since he got there. But he says he's not worried that the same thing could happen again in Game 2. Hey, believe me, it could. It could if they let them get out and transition the way they did and they don't get more from their bigs. Then they're down 2-0. They're headed back to Houston, and that series is already over. Spurs fan, I would not hit the panic button yet, but I'd be very concerned if I were you, and I would consider Game 2 a must-win game. Sam Amick is my guest. Sam, it's great to have you back. What's up?
Romy, what's going on, buddy? Always doing your homework.
Yeah, man. Tell me about that, Sam. What happened that day?
Oh, it's not nearly as good a story as it sounds. That's called short and rim, and when you're playing ball in the front yard with the garage door open and the metal spike underneath the garage door getting in the way of your dunk attempt. It was pretty ugly.
That sucks. Sam Amick joining us. All right, Sam, glad we got that out of the way. You were the only member, Sam, the only member of the USA Today staff to pick Houston to beat San Antonio in this series after that Game 1 blowout. Would you like to take a victory lap this morning?
I'm not going to because it's popping the Spurs. I'm not that stupid. And, you know, I was having fun with that on Twitter last night, but you know, it's one game, but obviously, you know, it's one thing for the Rockets to steal one in San Antonio. It's another for them to do what they did. I was shocked. I know everybody else was shocked. And you kept watching. I mean, even midway through the second quarter, it started feeling like, you know, okay, it's a huge Rockets lead, but this is about the time where, you know, these guys on the Spurs side are going to cut that lead maybe to, you know, 12-14, and then to make, you know, make their way back into it. And it never happened. The threes kept falling for the Rockets. Pretty amazing stuff.
Sam Amick joining us. All right, so the outcome's not surprising, but the way they lost is. When you saw the matchups before that series, what was it that made you feel like Houston was going to win?
I mean, you know, again, it's not as if, you know, I had Houston in seven. I thought it'd be competitive. When they played during the regular season, there was a combined point differential in all four games of 12 points, 3 2-point games and 1 6-point game. So we had a good sample size going into this series to know that they were pretty evenly matched. You know, Harden and Kawhi both played extremely well individually in those matchups, which I found fascinating because you would think that maybe the combination of Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green could slow Harden down. You know, that wasn't the case in the regular season. It wasn't the case last night. I feel like the reason I give the Rockets the edge is just, you know, it's an offensive league these days, and what the Rockets are doing and when they do it at their best, it's so hard to stop. And they play good enough defense, and I think against a team like the Spurs that I can't figure out San Antonio offensively right now because they seem more stagnant than we're used to seeing. They seem like they're too isolation heavy with Kawhi, yet somewhat under the radar going into the second round, they had the best offensive rating of any team in the first round of the playoffs. So that part was kind of puzzling, but just evenly matched, two very good coaches, and I think it's going to be a fun, long series.
Sam Mamick joining us. He's an NBA insider for USA Today Sports. All right, Sam, what about the Clippers? Let me move on to that. They lose Game 7 at home to Utah Jazz. Was that officially the end of an era for L.A. and the start of an era for Utah?
Definitely very, very possible for both. If we're just handicapping it here based on, you know, spitballing in early May, I think Chris Paul is going to resign. I don't think the end of the Chris Paul era with the Clippers has arrived. If I had to pick, I think, you know, maybe Blake Griffin's in a different jersey next year. And I think J.J. Redick very possibly, maybe likely could be too. So, you know, I think Doc is going to be back. I don't think Doc's going to go anywhere. And I think they're going to retool. But we'll see. You know, maybe when they look at Blake's situation, you know, if Plan B behind Blake Griffin doesn't look anywhere near as good as Blake himself, then maybe they find a way to give Blake that max deal. The Jazz, you know, they've got their own quandary when it comes to free agency, and I wrote about this the other day and how specifically you got Gordon Hayward and George Hill coming up in free agency, and I do think it was extremely important for them to survive the first round to kind of raise Gordon's level of confidence even more so than George. I feel like if you were Gordon – and you knew the Boston Celtics were going to be coming at you in free agency and you were going to have so many options, the idea that now you know that if you leave town that you left something where you guys were able to build and it was going in the right direction, I think that's big for Utah.
Sam Mamick joining us, covering a lot of ground. All right, Sam, so the Jazz get to face Golden State starting tonight. Getting past the Clippers, Sam, is a great accomplishment for Utah, but you had a great moment with Hayward when the reality sunk in that they now get to face Golden State. What was his reaction like in that instant?
Honestly, the look on his face when he realized what I was asking him, and he was surrounded by folks, and I was trying to steal a quick minute. And I said, hey, you're about to get swamped here by people, but give me a quick scouting report on the Warriors. He kind of laughed, and he says, like, first of all, there's no such thing as a quick scouting report on the Warriors. And he also said, honestly, I didn't even think about who we were playing yet. It was a little bit of a splash of cold water in his face, like, congratulations, you survived the first round, and now you get to play arguably one of the best, you know, regular season teams of all time. It's an interesting matchup. I certainly think the Warriors are going to win. But Utah and the way they defend is going to make it tough on Golden State. I think it'll be fascinating to see if they can slow down the Warriors' pace. Utah was the slowest offensive team in the league this season, and they're very methodical. But, you know, they can strike you in transition, too. I mean, Gordon can be very good with an up-tempo game. So, interesting matchup. I think, you know, maybe the Warriors drop one or two, but I think ultimately they move on.
Sam Mamick joining us. Sam, I thought you had a great piece yesterday with Golden State assistant Ron Adams talking about how the Warriors are dealing with the uncertainty surrounding Steve Kerr's health. How would you describe the emotions and the mindset of that team right now without their head coach?
Extremely mature is the word that comes to mind. It's such a smart human group. I know that sounds like a real general way of describing it, but Ron's one of my favorite people in the league. He's, you know, 69-year-old man who acts and coaches as if he's, you know, 20 years younger, got a good spirit about him. And the rest of those guys, too, Jaren Collins, Bruce Frazier, all the way down to the players, they have the kind of culture and the kind of relationships that allow them to withstand something like this where a top-tier coach like Steve Kerr is out for an indefinite amount of time. So they are sympathetic and concerned about Steve's situation, and then I think simultaneously just very focused on what they need to do to make up for his absence. Mike Brown obviously is in that spot, and by all accounts to this point, they're making the necessary adjustments, and they're going to be okay. You know, it helps when you got a team like that is full of grown-ups, you know, who have been in this league for a long time, guys like Iguodala and David West, who can kind of help make sure the ship goes in the right direction with Steph and the rest of those guys. So I think they'll be okay.
Clones. Why don't you give me just 1 minute of your time so I can talk to you about Stamps.com. Listen, Stamps saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package, using just my computer and printer, and the mailman will pick it up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. Stamps.com makes it so easy. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com, we even help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. There is no need to lease an expensive postage meter. I use Stamps.com because I love how easy it is. I love how convenient it is. I hate going to the post office. I no longer have to. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Stamps.com. Never, ever go to the post office again. That's Stamps.com. Now back to the Daily Jungle. Hey, speaking of Iguodala, a couple of Warriors players seem to be a little bit disappointed that they're going to Salt Lake City instead of L.A. because of the vibe in the city. Away from the court, you've seen the quote, of course, from Iggy, that it could, quote, kind of lull you to sleep, and then you've slept too long, or I'm bored out of my mind. Now you've got to try to pump yourself up for the game, end quote. What's your reaction to that, and is there any advantage to Utah in that?
I don't think so. If anything, I'd be more worried if I was the Warriors and guys were getting loose in LA a little bit, you know, that the advantage would be the Jazz's on that end, or I'm sorry, the Clippers on that end of it. I found that stuff pretty funny. He's not wrong. I mean, you know, Salt Lake City is very low key. I remember in my beat writing days when I covered the Kings, it's officially the only city where I sat and ate sushi and Benihana, you know, with guys from the team, because the city, there were so many few options. There's so few options that it's just kind of how it was. You all hung out together. Steph joked about going snow skiing. I doubt that's going to happen. But, you know, if I think for the Warriors' purposes, it's not a bad thing. They're going to be focused on the task at hand, and it's a pretty short trip.
Sam, Benihana, no matter where you are, rules. So what's Benihana in Salt Lake? What's Benihana in Salt Lake like?
It's the same, man. It's nothing. You know, I remember sitting, I'm trying to think who was there, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, the one and only, was with us.
Right.
And King Security, and, you know, same old deal. You sit there and figure out what you want to see them cook up in front of you, and you walk about 50 feet back to the hotel, and you decide if you're going to get a workout in or watch some TV and just kind of let the time pass until tip-off arrives.
Hey, one last thought. We talked about Steve Kerr and the fact that he's not there. On the flip side of that, what do you make of the job that Quinn Snyder's done with that team since he took over?
He's been great. I mean, I don't know if nationally people quite understand and appreciate yet kind of the way this Jazz team was built and how, you know, this is an offshoot of the San Antonio Spurs. This is Dennis Lindsay, former assistant GM of the Jazz, doing a fantastic job. You know, Quinn Snyder, a guy with Spurs roots himself, coming in, a respected coach, obviously, in the college ranks, and then making the transition. I'm not around that team a ton, but he seems to have a very good connection with his guys. And even that moment that you kind of alluded to earlier when I was talking to Gordon, you know, we got briefly interrupted when Quinn came over and he didn't care who was around Gordon or what, you know, the chaos that surrounded him. He saw Gordon in the corner and he wanted to come over and give him a big old hug. And you could tell that those two guys had a connection. You know, they've been through a few things together. If you remember Gordon a couple years ago, we thought maybe he was leaving in restricted free agency. So, you know, Quinn seems to be not only a very good X's and O's coach and a guy who is preaching the right things with a defense-first mentality, but also a guy that, when it comes to the relationships, is checking that box too.
Let's talk about that hit last night. So the Caps go into Pittsburgh after losing two games at home. They get up 2-0. They blow that lead. It goes to OT. They dig deep. They find a way to win it. And now they trail 2-1. In the meantime, the Penguins suffered a devastating blow when Sid Crosby left the game in the first period after getting cross-checked.
Forced back out again by Hornquist. Brought back by Crosby. Got it to Gensel. 2-1 to Crosby. Oh, and a poke there is made. There'll be a penalty coming up, but a great poke by Holtby. And that one is blocked down, chopped to the corner. And it becomes the first penalty of the game, but shaken up on the play, and still down is Crosby.
Watch Niskanen. Here comes Crosby. He loses his balance. And Matt Niskanen is there. And it's one of those reaction-type plays if you're Matt Niskanen. Sidney Crosby loses his balance. But to me, that's just one of those bang-bang plays that happen where I don't think there's any intention on Matt Niskanen.
Well, the officials saw it a different way, Eddie.
All right, that's NBC. That's Eddie Olczyk. He'll be on a little bit later on today. All right, so no update right now on Crosby's status. But again, given his concussion history, it's definitely a cause for concern. And while the team has not said anything yet, you might also be concerned about a knee or a lower body injury as well. He went down awkwardly when he crumbled to the ice. So here are your obvious questions. Was it a dirty hit? What should the punishment be for that hit? Niskanen gets a major penalty and a game misconduct for that cross check. He got ejected. So is there a suspension still coming on top of that? Or does that punishment last night fit that crime and should they be done with it? My personal opinion is the punishment fits the crime. The hit does not warrant a suspension. It does not warrant a suspension because it was not premeditated. It wasn't malicious. Now, it was illegal and it was dangerous. And given how great Crosby has been playing, it's a huge drag and a major blow to Pittsburgh if he misses any period of time. I mean, in that sense, you hate to see it. No matter who you want, no matter who you like, you hate to see that. But in my opinion, where I'm sitting, that hit was not deliberate. I know there's bad blood between these two teams. I know there may even be bad blood between those two players. And I don't know what's in Niskanen's head or his heart, but just watching that particular play, I don't see an intent to injure. What I see is Sidney Crosby crashing the net hard, as he does, and Niskanen doing what most in his position would do. With a guy like Crosby coming in that hard to the net, he gets his stick up to protect himself. Crosby loses his balance, and he takes that shot, that cross check. High. It's an illegal hit. But in my opinion, it's not a premeditated shot. And that's why I don't think it was dirty. Really unfortunate. Illegal and unfortunate, but not dirty. And again, not dirty, because to me, there was no deliberate intent to injure. Then again, try telling that to Penguins fan or Penguins coach Mike Sullivan. Mike Sullivan saw his star player crumple on a heap, and he's not sure when he's getting him back.
We don't have any updates on our injured guys. They'll be evaluated overnight, and then we'll go from there. I'd rather not share my opinion on it.
In not sharing your opinion on it, you shared your opinion on it. And understandably, he's unhappy. What about Niskanen? He was asked about it. For his part, he insists it was just a hockey play, a reactionary play, and that he was not intentionally trying to hurt Crosby.
It wasn't intentional. I've seen the replay. It's super slow mo. Looks really bad. Got him high. I think he's coming across trying to score. As he's doing that, he's getting lower and lower. And when it's happening that fast, my stick and his head collided. I wasn't extending, trying to hit him in the head.
I agree with that. He didn't square the guy up. He wasn't looking to take him out. And when you watch that thing in super slow-mo and you watch it over and over and over again, of course it looks bad. It is bad. But in real time, as quickly as that happens, when you have a guy that big and that strong crashing the net as hard as he does, you can see where something like that would happen. Again, the punishment was pretty severe. He got a game misconduct, ejected. And I think that punishment fits that particular crime. But now we wait. We wait to see if Crosby is going to miss any additional time. And if so, how much? And if the Penguins retaliate. If they retaliate here or they wait. Again, the league is not going to take any further action, it would appear. But just because the league isn't going to take any action does not mean the Penguins won't. And while, of course, they're not going to do anything stupid to hurt their chances in this series, if I'm Alex Ovechkin or TJ Oshie, I've got my head on a swivel. Because hockey will always police itself. Hockey will dole out its own brand of justice. Something the Caps coach, Barry Trotz, knows all too well.
Barry, if Sidney Crosby's out any length of time, how does that change the shape of this series?
Well, I don't. Obviously, he's one of the best players in the world. There's no question. I got the opportunity to work with Sid. He's a fantastic player, and that's a big hole.
Barry, is the play by Alex that led to Sid sort of staggering into Niskanen, where he appeared to get the stick up towards the face, is that a hockey play?
Was there a penalty?
Well, does it have to be a penalty to be a hockey play? I'm just asking. Well, is it a hockey play also?
No, I'm not going to defend anything. The sticks are. You want me to defend Alex? Then is Kunitz's predatory hit on Oshie okay? Or the one on Backstrom, is that okay?
I was just.
I'm not going to debate about all that stuff. So that's
so no
question.
So no, Barry.
Next, okay. you got your answer.
Things getting contentious on the ice, in the press gathering afterwards. I mean, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of heat, a lot of intensity. And, you know, I keep saying this every single day during the postseason. There's nothing better than the NHL postseason. If you're still not sold on this, watch one of these games. If you saw last night's game, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's amazing. Every single game, every single period, every single shift, every single power play, every single face-off. Eddie Olczyk is my guest. Ed, so good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Nice to be with you, pal. Hope you're doing good.
Eddie, I'm doing great. I would imagine you're doing pretty well. Stanley Cup playoffs are rolling. You're coming off a great Game 3 in Pittsburgh last night. The Derby is Saturday. So I'll just ask you point blank, how is your life right now?
Well, Jim, as you know, a quick little pit stop from Pittsburgh, home today in Chicago. Get my little laundry done. Get out my A1 and A2 suits out for the shows we got on NBC and NBCSN out of Louisville this week. And I think I might have to bring the rain gear, Jim. So hopefully the rain will hold off when the big race goes off on Saturday evening. But nothing better than pucks and ponies, that's for sure.
I love it. I love it. I love the A1 and the A2 suits. All right, what about that wild game last night, Ed, in Pittsburgh? Yeah. Let's start with the first period. Matt Niskanen hits Sidney Crosby in the head. Crosby was going to the net. Appeared to lose his balance before he hit him. So bottom line, was it a dirty hit in your mind, or was that simply a hockey play?
No, I think it was a hockey play that went bad, Jim. Doing the game last night for NBCSN and, you know, when you see the replay, and I'm glad we showed it both ways, Jim. We showed it in slow motion, and then we showed it in real speed. And look, unfortunately for Sidney Crosby, he lost his balance. Now, how he lost his balance, you know, the skate-on-skate with Ovechkin, you know, the slash in the back, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it was a desperation play by Ovechkin on the back check. Crosby goes across, loses his balance, and Matt Niskanen, as he turns, you know, there's Sidney Crosby. So, you know, the level of Sidney Crosby obviously changed because he lost his balance. Matt Niskanen, you know, has the stick into the head of Sidney Crosby. I didn't think it was a dirty play. I didn't think he should have been thrown out of the game. I think he should have got a penalty because you have to have control of your stick and you have to have, you know, you have to have responsibility for your actions. But I did not see an intent to injure. I didn't see a 5-minute penalty. The referees huddled up and they decided to throw Niskanen out of the game. So look, most importantly, hopefully Sidney Crosby is going to be okay sooner than later. But I believe it was a hockey play that went bad. And, you know, again, the optics of it in slow motion, Jim, I think it looks way worse. Like, look, it was a hard play. It was a nasty play. I don't think there was any intention because when you see Matt Niskanen, he turns completely around from his, you know, he turns his left shoulder and all of a sudden, you know, there's Sidney Crosby right in the crosshairs of Niskanen's stick, and I just think it was an unfortunate play where he lost the balance. If he doesn't lose his balance, he probably cross-checks him in the ribs, and that play happens 150 times a game. So long-winded, I said last night, I'll say it again, I don't think there was any intent on Matt Niskanen. Should have been a 2-minute penalty, and hopefully Sidney Crosby will be okay.
Eddie Olczyk joining us. Actually, Ed, that's not long-winded. I'm glad that you laid that out the way you did because we've been having this conversation, as I mentioned, for the entire program so far, and you're getting a lot of passion on both sides. You know, Ed, the other side is, I'm not saying I see it this way, but the other side is, and I'm hearing a lot of this is, hey, now, wait a minute. There is bad blood between these two teams. There's bad blood between those two guys, and he lined him up. He had a shot, and he took the shot. What's your reaction to that?
You know what, Jim? I can't say that because, like, I could say if it was a predatory hit where he knew where Crosby was coming from and he, you know what I mean? Like he had his back to the play. I think that's what people have to look at. And again, I mean, it's hard, you know, because I lived it for 16 years. I lived it as a broadcaster. I lived it as a coach. I mean, you see those plays happen. They happen so quickly where just unfortunately a guy loses his balance and, you know, he takes the, you know, worst of it. But I think for anybody to insinuate that Matt Niskanen, you know, knew that Sidney Crosby was going to be off balance and take his stick and cross-check him in the side of the head, I'd like to take Niskanen with me to the Kentucky Derby this weekend if he knew that is exactly what's going to happen. I don't like to see any player get hurt, let alone a guy that I coach and a guy that has been as elite as any player in the National Hockey League for the last, 10, 12 years, whatever it's been for Sidney Crosby. But when you just look at the whole play in its totality, I just believe it was a hockey play that went bad. And, yeah, look, there's bad blood. There's a lot of stuff going out there on both sides. It's just not Capitals on Penguins or Niskanen on Crosby. There's lots of stuff going on. So for me, Jim, I just think that it was just one of those things that was unfortunate. The referees made the call. The Capitals, came out of that unscathed. Braden Holtby had a big bounce-back game. They needed it. He needed it. Marc-Andre Fleury was sick last night, and he made a couple of incredible saves to give his team an opportunity. And look, the Penguins, with no Sidney Crosby for two periods, no Chris Letang, Capitals got Carl Alsner back there. You could argue their best defensive defenseman, and the Penguins found a way to tie that game and get into the overtime. I think it shows the plums on the table mentality of the Pittsburgh Penguins. That doesn't matter who's in, who's out. We're going to give you a run for your money. And unfortunately for them, they just came up a little short.
Eddie Olczyk joining us. All right, Ed, let's talk about a couple of things you mentioned. Holtby pulled in game two after the win last night. He told Pierre McGuire that he spoke with a sports psychologist who told him, quote, "The puck doesn't know that it's a big game. Just do what you do." It's kind of like what we talk about in horse racing, Ed, right? The horse doesn't know he's 20-1. He doesn't know he's 20-1. What do you make of the way Holtby showed up last night, the way he played? What'd you think?
Well, He had to. He showed what he is made of, and the mentality and the numbers don't lie. What he's done here the last couple of years, Jim. I mean, it was a huge bounce back game for him. I go back to game two. I applauded the decision by Barry Trotz in game two to pull his number one goaltender, because look, two of the three goals he gave up were bad goals. And look, you can't afford bad goals in any game, let alone a playoff series and against a team like Pittsburgh, because you can't just, you just can't give them gifts. And look, they end up losing the game, but Holtby came back and he did the job, and that's what you need. You need your difference makers to do just that. And last night, when the Penguins really came and they were putting on the pressure, Holtby was able to make a couple of really good saves. Yeah, he got a little lucky every once in a while, but tell me what goaltender isn't lucky every once in a while when he has a great game. But that was a big bounce back game for Braden Holtby, and I think it sends a pretty strong message to that team that, hey, it doesn't matter what the situation is that, I'm going to do the job. And, look, enough talk, right? You got to go out there and do it. And I think that's what the Capitals did from game two to game three last night in the Berg.
Eddie Olczyk joining us. One more thought, Ed, about that series. If Crosby does not return in game four, if he misses more time in the series, can you see Pittsburgh advancing without him?
I don't, Jim. That's playing, you're playing five-card stud with three cards. I mean, it really is. Like, look, with Mario Lemieux 66 running that team, I've seen him pull three aces and three Kongs every once in a while in a card game. So it wouldn't surprise me, Jim. But look, you take Crosby. If Crosby can't play, you're already missing your best defenseman. I mean, they're playing shorthanded as it is. But look, this team has incredible resolve, and that's the one word that Mike Sullivan, who's done a hell of a job there with the Penguins, has used a lot. So look, I would say you can't say never, but you certainly like the chances of the Capitals. And look, and if Crosby is out and the Capitals can't get it done, well, shame on them then. I mean, see what happens. But it would be really difficult if Crosby can't play for the Penguins to be able to take down the Capitals. And I think everybody in hockey would expect the Capitals to win that series when you don't have arguably the best player in the world in the lineup and they're missing their best defenseman. But again, the goaltender in hockey, Jim, we've talked over the years. We've known each other some 25 years now. The goaltender can be it camouflages a lot of deficiencies, and it could be the greatest equalizer. Just like on a racetrack, sometimes a sloppy track can be a great equalizer. Well, the goaltender can do that. And the way that Fleury's playing right now, he has the ability to go ahead and say, you know what, guys, just get me one. Get me one, and I can win this game. And then who knows from there. So obviously, that game tomorrow night in the Berg is going to be gigantic, game four.
Eddie Olczyk joining us. And on that off track, Ed, as we know, some horses love it and some don't like it at all. You're headed back to Kentucky. Ultimately, the Derby is coming up this weekend. I know you're right in the middle of things with the NHL playoffs, but have you started to take a look at the field? And if so, what kind of thoughts do you have for the Derby?
Yeah, you know what, Jim? I'm really going to be intrigued with the post positions and with how the track comes up, because they're expecting quite a bit of rain there tomorrow, Thursday. It's supposed to rain, you know, intermittent on Friday, and then we're not sure what's going to happen on Saturday. So look, we're hoping that the track can be, you know, relatively dry, so to speak. But you know what it is, once you have moisture in there, some horses like it, some don't. Some don't like the, you know, the kickback. And look, these horses, 3 years old, a lot of them will never run a mile and a quarter in their life again. I mean, it is a championship distance without question. You know, but for me, look, Classic Empire, the two-year-old champion last year, won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Santa Anita last year. He won a big race in his most recent outing. You know, I think until somebody takes him down, he's the horse to beat. But again, you know, where is he going to? You know, how is he going to train up to the Derby? He's had some issues away from the track. What post position he's going to get? You know, how much speed is going to be in this? I think there's going to be a pretty good lick in this race, Jim. I think that there's going to be a lot of pace, and I'm going to look for a horse that's maybe mid-range that can be tactical, maybe sit off the leaders for the first, you know, three-quarters of a mile or a mile, and then go ahead and try to make it a quarter-mile sprint home. But probably a little bit too early for my pick, but, you know, I think Classic Empire will be the favorite. It'll be interesting to see what Always Dreaming, one of the three entrants for Todd Pletcher, where he will be, because he's been very amped up in his training, and I think he's got a chance to be a second or third favorite for the run for the Roses on Saturday.
You know, Ed, I really agree with you. The draw is going to be important. The track is going to be important. The elements come into play. And I think Classic Empire, I'm not exactly sure because I'm not there how he's doing. If the horse is right and he's doing well, I think he's definitely the one to beat. Would you also argue, though, Ed, that the thing is wide open? As derbies go, this is about as wide open as it gets.
It is. Look, a 20-horse field, Jim, I've been known to get my feet wet every once in a while. Okay, every day when I play the ponies. But,
right.
You know, look, I think when you're looking at in Classic Empire, I think we'll probably be 4-1, 9-2 favorite. Now, remember, four straight years, the favorite at the Kentucky Derby has won the Roses. And I think that's, you know, that's an interesting number here. And can the favorite do it again? But I think it is so wide open. I think there's so many variables. And I'm not even talking about the weather yet. I just think that there are some horses that have the ability, that might be sitting on a big race, that have the ability to go ahead and make that run and win, you know, and win that big race on Saturday, Jim. So to me, I think it is all about, you know, how you feel that the pace is going to, you know, with the post position, so how the pace is going to be, and find that horse that you might be sitting on a big race. Because, look, you got question marks about Gervin. You know, he's had some issues with a hoof issue. And, you know, I mean, some of these horses are bred to run a mile and a 16th, but aren't bred for a mile and a quarter. But how is the track going to be playing? And you know Churchill Downs, Jim. I mean, that's the type of track that sometimes it gets a bias, meaning that, hey, I don't care how fast you are or how speedy you might be. That track, sometimes you can't win on the front end. It just doesn't cater to front runners. So I think that's another thing that you have to keep an eye on, is how the track is playing over the course of the next couple of days. And that's what makes this game so great, is that you don't have to invest a whole heck of a lot to go ahead and back up the Brinks truck, because if you get the right numbers, you'll be living on easy street for the next, well, at least for the next couple of months anyway.
Hey, last stop before you go, the one thing we did not mention, the jockey, the rider, in a 20-horse field like that, as you point out, three-year-olds that have never run this far, and many of them will never run that far ever again, how important is the jockey in a race like that?
Well, very important, because, you know, when maybe, like, I think talking to Hall of Famer Jerry Bailey, who does a tremendous job on our NBC broadcast, Jim, and I think just talking to Jerry, it's like, you know, like, you think you want to go, right? I mean, you want to go now, and you know, it's, okay, well, I got to just, you know, can I hold on just a little bit longer? You know, when do you press go? When do you hit send? And it's almost like in a game of hockey. It's like last night I was talking about the goal that Kuznetsov scored on Fleury. It's almost like, when you have the puck in a game and you see a goaltender in a zone, you got to have patience. You almost got to sit there, Jim, and count and go 1-1,000, 2-1,000, and then let it go, because the goaltender knows what you're going to do. And I think as far as a jockey and a jockey race like this, it makes a huge difference on knowing when to hit go, and then also, too, to know where horses are on the track, because a 20-horse field, you get in, I mean, for the most part, if you get in any traffic problems, it might cost you a placing, let alone, you know, winning the Kentucky Derby.
Anthony Lynn is my guest. Anthony, good to have you back. How are you?
It's good to be back, Rome.
Good to have you back, Coach. Thanks so much. You just went through your first draft as head coach. What was your experience like, and how is it different from the previous ones that you had been through?
You know, this one, I was in the war room the whole time. Previously, I was in and out as a position coach and a coordinator, just kind of in and out of the war room. But to sit in the war room and, you know, and anticipate the picks, getting the players that you want, and sometimes someone snatching the guy you want right before you pick, it was pretty exciting. But what was really cool was the preparation and the time that we put in with all of our mock drafts and practice. It really paid off.
Anthony Lynn joining us. I mean, you can go through so many things and prepare for so many different kind of scenarios, but how close did it play out to what you were hoping for or what you were expecting?
You know, it played out pretty close. I mean, there were a couple surprises. There were a couple players there that we didn't think would be there when we were picking, and you know, we took a couple linemen. But it was pretty close.
Right, so what you get is your wide receiver, Mike Williams, in the first round. When you selected him, it had to feel pretty good. You're watching film of him. So what did you see, and why did you think that he might be a good fit for your team?
You know, when I'm studying a player, Rome, and as I'm studying that player, I have a vision for him, and I can see how I'm going to use this player. That gets me excited. And when I'm watching Mike Williams, I mean, I so many ideas went through my mind of how we could use this guy and how he could help the team, especially in the red zone and making plays for Phillip down the field. And so I was fortunate to get him where we got him. You know, he could have been gone before seven, but he's just a heck of a player.
Anthony Lynn joining us. Speaking of Phillip, he texted Williams right after he was drafted, and now you've got an offense that has Keenan Allen, Antonio Gates, Hunter Henry, Melvin Gordon, and now Williams. With Phillip Rivers running things, when you look at all those pieces, how excited are you about the potential of that group?
I'm pretty excited because Phillip, being a veteran guy, you know, he likes matchups, you know, and that's what this game is all about, is matchups. And Phillip can he can read a defense. I believe he can deliver the ball in places that it's supposed to go and take advantage of those matchups. And so, you know, we have another weapon and hopefully another matchup issue for the defense.
Now, you mentioned the linemen. You also get offensive linemen Forrest Lamp and Dan Feeney with your next couple of picks. So the first three picks were a wide receiver and a couple of guys up front. So knowing that, what did Rivers make of the draft?
Oh, he loved it. You know, he gets help in the run game. He gets protection. He loved the draft. Phillip was a great draft.
Anthony Lynn joining us. You know, one of the thoughts going into the draft was maybe you add a young quarterback to develop behind Rivers. Although you signed Eli Jenkins as an undrafted free agent, you did not use a pick on a quarterback. He's 35 now. Quarterbacks, Anthony, obviously are playing longer and longer. Have you had any conversations with him about his future and how long he wants to play?
You know, Phillip wants to play forever, and that's what you want in a quarterback. You know, I'm always leery of these guys that tell me, you know, I think I'm going to play another year or two. You know, I want the ones that you got to push you out, you got to run off. You know, those are the ones that love football and can't get enough. And that's how Phillip is, and he's in great shape. He's lost 9-10 pounds. Watch him run around on the field with the younger guys. He looks rejuvenated, and he got a little zip on the ball. You know, he can play for – he can have some productive years, three or four more productive years easily in my mind. But, you know, we did think about bringing in a young quarterback and just let him sit and watch and learn. But we weren't going to reach for that guy. You know, it had to be the right guy that we felt like could come in here and down the line maybe be the starter. I didn't want to just bring a guy on the team. And so that guy wasn't there, so we didn't go that direction.
Los Angeles Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn talking about the draft. In the fifth round, you got Desmond King, an All-American and a Thorpe Award winner. How pleased were you to get him where you got him, and how do you see him fitting in?
You know, I was surprised to see him there in the fifth, but we thought about taking him in the fourth. We thought for sure he'd be going in the fifth, but he was there. And you know, you get a guy like that, you know, measurable-wise, it doesn't add up sometimes, height, weight, and speed, but you just look at the tape. The young man's a football player, and he's been a productive football player his whole life, and that's not going to stop. And so when we see him fitting in multiple roles, nickel, maybe go out and play some outside and corner, some free safety. I see a guy that can start on four special teams. That's an area that we need to improve, and it was an emphasis in this draft and priority free agents to get guys that can come in and play special teams, and I expect him to be a core guy.
Yeah, again, an All-American and a Thorpe Award winner. Why do you think he was still available? Why did he fall to the fifth round?
You know, like I say, you know, when you look at his measurables, he's not the ideal height that you want to put outside the corner. He's thick, he's physical and all that, but doesn't necessarily have the quickness and change of direction, and that didn't show in the shuttle, you know, the being elite cover guy in the slot, you know, and I think when you look at those things, height, weight, speed, sometimes it catches up with you in the draft. But one thing that doesn't lie, and that's the tape.
Yeah, I wonder about that. What about the things that are not measurables? I mean, I understand why they're going to look at that, and it might catch up with you in the draft, and the tape doesn't lie. But what about the things that you can't measure? I mean, you can't cut a guy open and see what's inside of him. How much do you put into those things? How big a value is that?
I put a lot into those things. I mean, you're talking to a priority free agent. That a lot of people passed up on, that played 8 years in the league and won a couple of championships, you know. So I put a lot into those intangibles and heart and production. I'm not big on potential. I like the guys that do it.
You know, on top of that, one of the phrases that's been used quite a bit, in fact, it's on T-shirts that guys are wearing, quote, always compete, always compete. I mean, it seems self-evident, but what does that phrase mean to you in terms of the culture and attitude that you're looking to build there and cultivate?
Every single day, Rome, just come in this building and be the best that you can be. And I've told these guys several times, the biggest competition is themselves. And how do you do that? How do you come in every day and get yourself to compete to be better than you were yesterday? And I just think if I can get 53 guys pulling in the same direction and doing that, I think we'll be successful.
Yeah, I mean, what about that? I mean, it's the NFL's got to be the most competitive thing in the world. You'd think that everybody who's in that league could never get to that league if they didn't have that mentality already. Does everybody not have that? And if they don't have it by then, how do you cultivate that?
Well, by the guys that you bring in, the intangibles, the leadership skills that you're looking for, and just creating some clarity. I said it from day one in my meeting, exactly what I wanted. And every guy in this building and every coach knows the standard and expectation. And it's re-emphasized all the time. And if someone's struggling with it, I'll help them with it. And if they struggle too much, we'll get them the hell out of here. So just clarity.
Anthony, if they're struggling with it and you help them with it, how exactly do you help them with it? What does that involve?
You mentor. Some people are not. People grow at different. People grow differently. Some people get it sooner than others. And the guys that are struggling, you mentor them. You bring them in, you talk with them, you sit them down, and you try to help them the best you can. And if they still don't get it, then that's when you have to move on.
Hey, listen, since you've been hired, there have been meetings, there have been preparations for the move, there was Radio Row at Super Bowl, there was a lot of work that was not having anything to do with the football field. How good was it? How nice was it for you to get back on the field and actually coach?
Oh, it felt really good, especially out here in this good weather, man. It's just great to be outside. It's almost a sin to be inside, but it felt really good to get back on the practice field.
Wait, you mean it doesn't remind you of Buffalo out here, the weather?
Buffalo has its moments, but this weather in Cali is special.
Dude, I'm not here to crack Buffalo. I love Buffalo, but I'm a SoCal native. We know what we have here. We have good weather.
No doubt.
Last thing, late March, you went to the coaches' meetings in Arizona. Andy Reid was joking that he was not looking to give either you or Vance Joseph, the two new coaches in the division, any advice or any pointers. What was it like? I mean, look, you have a lot of credibility. People know about you. They know your background. But what's it like when the head coaches all get together? Are there a lot of stories and laughs, or do dudes pretty much play it close to the vest?
You know what? There are a lot of stories and laughs. I enjoyed it. I was expecting guys to keep it pretty close to the vest, but guys were really open. It was coming up, offering advice and how to do this and how to do that, and giving me the numbers if you ever need anything. At the end of the day, that's what this game's all about. This is a relationship business, and it's a tight fraternity, and that's the way guys, just the way they respond to me. They reminded me of that.
That's what I was going to say. The word I was going to use was fraternity. What's it like? Now, you're part of a very elite fraternity. One thing to be in that league and that family, but now you're part of one of the most elite fraternities. What's that feel like?
It feels good. It feels good. And sometimes, to be completely honest, it feels lonely.
Right. Explain that. What do you mean by that? I get it.
I don't have my room anymore. I don't have my side of the ball anymore. I've got the whole team. But it's just the way people sometimes look at you now that you're in that seat. My door's always open, and I tell guys that, but, they don't. It's different. I sit in this office sometimes by myself, and I don't have my group, I don't have my guys, and I miss that. I really do. I miss that. And then I go venture out and sit in somebody's meeting and everybody shut up. When I walk in, they shut up. You know, so it's a little different now, the whole dynamics.
Right. You're like, why'd it get so quiet all of a sudden? Hey, wait a minute. What's going on here? So,
you know what I'm saying?
What do you do with your rings? Do you ever break the rings out? Where do you keep the rings?
You know what? I think they're in storage back in New York right now.
You think? You don't know?
Either my wife have them with her at our house or are they in storage? But I really don't know, to be honest with you. They were in a shoebox, and I'm not sure where that box is at.
So pretty much, I'm not looking for you to get them jacked or anything, but I guess that tells you what they represent, right? It's kind of like the process and what you did to win them and what you experienced, but it's not like the physical ring itself that's so important.
You know what? And that's the thing. It's really not. I don't even wear those rings. It's the process that I enjoy the most. It's the journey, you know, and that's what I got the most pleasure out of was the journey. It wasn't necessarily the hardware.
Anthony Lynn, head coach of the LA Chargers. He was named head coach on January 13th. My man, thanks for picking me up. Great to have you back on, Anthony. Always good talking to you.
Great to be on, Ro.
Emails.
Jimmo's. Did you hear the heavy NFL news today? Apparently, the Panthers exercised their team option on the only player on the team who doesn't exercise. Coincidentally, they picked up Kelvin Benjamin's fifth year this morning at the same time that Kelvin Benjamin picked up his fifth burrito. Signed Greg and Bugaha. War Calzone Benj Hammond. You mean like Binge Hammond? Calzone Binge Hammond. Man, don't hurt yourself, Greg. Calzone Binge Hammond. What I think about the show is, back in the day when we had a glossary of items and names, I would come up with some, you would come up with some, and then the gloss kind of took shape, took form. I'm not coming up with any of these things. I have no interest. Let the record reflect that if all of a sudden this shows up either on Twitter or on the program or in an email, it's not me. I want Kelvin Benjamin to know that I'm not calling him Calzone Binge Hammond. That's not me. I don't condone it. I don't say it. And every time one of you submits an email like that and I read it and it comes out of my mouth, it then gets back to said athlete that I called him that. I didn't call Kelvin Benjamin anything other than Kelvin Benjamin. I read an email from Greg in Bugaha referring to him as Calzone Binge Hammond. Here's a problem, Greg. Greg, would you agree that having a Carolina Panther on this show is a good thing? Sure you would. What's going to happen when we call the Panthers to book a guest, whether it's Benjamin or somebody else, and one of the PR folks there says, oh yeah, Rome, we thought we were pretty good with you, but then all of a sudden we heard you gloss Kelvin Calzone. And then we heard you call him Binge Hammond. I didn't. And nor did I come up with a fat alarm, which is what this guy is warning me to do. Alvin, I know you don't have a fat alarm. Alvin, look, you've got the autonomy and the authority to do essentially whatever you want. You are the most senior member of my staff, the most senior member of the XR4TI. I know you do things without me knowing. That's fine. I've delegated that to you. I have trust in you. You're the best at what you do. However, at any point did I ever say to you, hey, Alvin, you know what we need? We need a fat alarm. So why do you have one? And let me just also ask this question. You don't have more than one, do you? Count, Alvin, that's two. There best not be a third. If you have three variations of the fat alarm, that would suggest to me that maybe there are three updates of a celebrity gaining weight. Alvin, I'm trying to break them of this habit. You're not helping them, you're hurting them, and you shouldn't be coming. Wait, what was that? Did you get Pharrell in there too? Alvin.
Fat ass.
Alvin. 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 You're not helping him. You're hurting him. And you should not be dropping fat alarms on the radio, man. Alvin, we don't do updates on people who gain weight. Why do you need an alarm? All your other alarms exist for a reason. I'm not updating weight gain. The hell's the matter with you, kid? Three fat alarms. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate you as always. Now do what you do. Hit subscribe, tell a friend, trust the podcast, and then check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. We'll see you then.